Good evening. Welcome to Flames Unfiltered, hosted by Brad Brood and Kyle Lewis. Kyle, we are here talking Flames hockey again this week. Last week, we had a little different show, and we're back for a regular episode because the Flames are back, right?
Yeah, it's kind of nice. I was really starting to miss the team, you know? We kind of needed a break after the crappy stretch with which we entered the Four Nations break.
Right? Well, we had that horrible game against the Kraken. And then, I mean, my spirits were in the dumps. And I think a lot of the Flames fan base was, and I know yours were too. And the Four Nations break came and we were happy. And then about halfway through it, I was like, a Tuesday night, no Flames. This is no fun.
Yeah. Well, and it was weird too, because there's what else was there other than, I think, some basketball and, you know, spring training ball. Like, that's it. There's no football.
And that spring training just started. So, I mean, there's really not a lot to watch. Like, if you're a sports guy, it was pretty slim pickings, you know. But it's back now, and the Flames played last night. A big win over the Washington Capitals. And it's these last two wins against the Sharks and the Capitals have kind of, I don't know, is it send us back on that roller coaster, right?
Well, yeah, that's kind of the thing. I mean, I don't think anybody expected, least of all me, at least, you know, the win against the Capitals. The San Jose game was pretty flat. The Flames looked like a team that was, the team looked like they were all on vacation, you know, kind of struggling to get back into a groove. But the game against the Capitals might have been the best one they played this year, or damn near it, if not.
I would agree. It was fully entertaining. The San Jose game was just like, when Celebrini scored right away, I was like, oh boy, this is not what we wanted coming back here. But the team fought back, and Joel Hanley gets a game winner. When we're counting on Rooney and Hanley to score for us, that's trouble. I know we both had a heyday on Twitter with that one, but geez.
we all did. All the Flames community.
For sure. But we needed that 2 points, and then going into Washington, I'm not going to lie, Kyle, I was not all that pumped to watch that game last night. And as I watched, I was kind of started laughing a little bit inside, because I was like, this is a perfect road game, right?
Well, I was texting a buddy of mine bemoaning the fact that Ryan Huska started the fourth line, who admittedly, as you just mentioned, had a good game against San Jose. I'm like, oh, why would you start this line against the best team in the league? And then they potted the goal, you know, like midway through the first. I'm just like, oh, I look like such an idiot.
Why is it like, and I don't think it's just us, but like sometimes both me and you will, it happens to me a lot, probably more than it happens to you, but I'll put something on X and then I'll be like, as soon as I do it, I swear I hit send, and then something happens and it's like, makes me look like a complete moron.
Well, you know what the worst of it is? It's like in person, like in conversation, you know, that can happen. But with something like posting online, you have every opportunity to not do it.
Oh yeah.
When you send a nasty text, it's like, you can stop yourself. But we come so conditioned to community those ways, we don't stop ourselves, and we still look idiots. We're still our idiots, whatever the case may be.
So what did you think of the Pospisil goal last night?
I was kind of interested in how quickly the commentator said it wasn't a kicking motion, because to me initially I'm like, oh, that might have been kicked.
I thought it was kicking. I did.
Yeah.
So here's what I always think, and God, I know it's Flames fans. We drag up the demons of the past up way too much. But like, if Blake Coleman's goal doesn't count and Pospisil's counts, like, I don't understand hockey anymore.
It's goaltender interference. You know, same thing all over again. Nobody knows what the actual rule is. Well, I shouldn't say that, because we all know what the actual rule is. Like, you can't make a kick in motion towards the puck, which to me is a pretty skillful play. So you should be able to do it. But
I think high sticking should be allowed too. I mean, not like the high sticking of the puck, not high sticking of a player.
Yeah. Right.
Clarify there. I don't want to sound like some barbaric person here.
No, exactly. But unlike yourself, I was looking forward to the game because I've been so goddamn sick. I couldn't really do anything else. So I was ready to watch.
Kyle's day to day here. He's under the weather. That's why we pushed back the pod this week. And it was a good choice, because now we get to talk about this fun Washington game. But
it wasn't a choice I willingly made. It was, I went from being DOA to day to day. So holy Lord.
Life happens though, right? I mean, it just does. And like, we roll on the fly, and everybody understands, but I'm glad you're feeling a little better. I mean, it's tough when you're not feeling well.
It's incremental, right? So,
yeah.
But yeah, no, it was good. I mean, this was the big thing for me, and I think for most of us, this was the first time these last couple games especially the game against Washington, where we get to see a full healthy Flames team and what that looks like now, Frost and Fairbairn being added. And it was, you know, like I said, San Jose was really flat, but I think obviously they got the 2 points there. Then with Washington having Slovyov playing really well since he's been called up, I think Pospisil's added a lot to that fourth line because he wasn't really fitting into a scoring role this season.
Did we finally find a place for Pospisil that, like, we were probably way overplaying him when he was on the first line, probably overplaying him on the second line. I always kind of thought he was a third line guy, but maybe he is. If you're a really good hockey team, he's a great fourth liner, right?
I would think so. I mean, I still think he's versatile enough to move up and down the lineup because of his foot speed and he's got a heavy shot, but given his lack of scoring this year, like that was only his fourth goal against the Capitals. And with the acquisitions like Frost and Farabee, Frost especially, he's been dynamic offensively so far. It really adds a skill that we haven't really seen much from anybody else this season.
I think Farabee is going to end up being a good player too for us. I really do.
He's been a lot slower going, I find, but hopefully.
I don't expect a ton of points, but like, I think he just is ideal on the third line though, right? I mean, he's going to be, that's where he'll fit no matter who he's with, right?
Yeah. I think I'd like to see him with Coleman and Backlund.
I do too. I think that would be a really good line.
Yeah, get Zeri into more of a scoring role. That's what I'd like to see. But I also appreciate Zeri coming back from injury, playing him on the safest line there is to play him on, right?
Right. That is good. That's good coaching. I've been a little bit critical of Huska lately, but I did like that move. I think that's super smart and it's paying off, I think, because I think Zari's getting his feet wet coming back. I thought he looked pretty decent last night.
Yeah, he started to come around. I mean, he missed a lot of time with a pretty significant injury, one that, you know, for lack of a better way of saying it, probably should have been way worse considering it was knee on knee. I think as this road trip kind of winds up, he's going to get better and better, and we'll need him to be because this is a really, really tough opponent.
This is a gauntlet here. I mean, we are in the middle of it, and I promise you, when we get home from this road trip in March, what is it? Let me look here. We get home on this March 6th. Last game's against Dallas. We will have clarity in the playoff picture, whether it's good or bad. We will have clarity because this is a gauntlet, and if we can run these and gain, I mean, I said the other day, 3 points in the holy crap. I said that on the show last week or 2 weeks ago, and I was like, that's low ball. But if we could somehow, you know, get 6 points out of this road trip, hey, we're still probably in the race, right? Vancouver's doing nothing to help themselves, that's for sure.
No, and it's interesting too, like looking at the schedule, it's just hockey's a funny sport. Like the way that it played out, so the Flames are just 1 point ahead of the Canucks right now, and you look at the standings and you think, oh, you know, the Kings are still within, you know, striking distance too. And who are they playing? Of course, the Canucks and Kings are freaking playing each other. And it's like,
and you know it's going to be a 3-point game tonight. You know it is going to be.
Yeah, like why couldn't the Canucks follow Calgary into Washington and get beat up by Ovechkin? Like it's just, you get no help at all.
Edmonton's doing a good job of it though.
Yeah, this is true. This is true. Holy Lord.
Oh, I saw you put on X the other day. The Flames have tons of cap space, blue chip prospects, some franchise goaltender, lots of draft picks, and are in the playoff race. Pretty enviable franchise right now, and something we haven't been able to say a lot in the past. I completely agree with it. And what's your confidence level that we survive this and are in the playoffs?
That's a
tough question because I mean this week probably be a little easier question for you next week to ask you, but I'm asking.
Well, not because of the standings, but because of how I feel. all told, I mean, pretty damn high, honestly, because this is the best lineup we have had all season. I did get a little bit of pushback on that comment. The vast majority of people seem to agree, but there was some talk around like the only blue chipper being Zane Parekh, which
I disagree.
Yeah, like
I mean I don't think we have the deepest prospect pool, but I think, you know, I think Stromgren's going to be good. I think Buskevich is going to be an everyday Flames player too. I really do. And how there's a couple other ones I'm just obviously right off not off the top of my head here, but Grindin, Is another one that I have high hopes for, but I guess we'll see what happens, right?
Yeah, and that's the thing. I mean, it's I guess blue chip in most people's eyes, understandably so, means like somebody that's ripping it up at every level. Like, you know, it depends on how you look at it, but at the end of the day, however, let's take that word into the equation then, okay? We're talking about prospect cupboards are essentially full at most positions. I still think we're missing an elite center.
Oh, for sure. For sure we are.
But there's a lot, like the last draft they had was just like an embarrassment of riches. I mean, you look at the cap space the Flames have, the cap's going up. They have the ability to take on bad contracts from other teams to leverage certain assets. Like, I don't know what more you could want, because I don't know about you. Well, I mean, I do know about you because we agree on this most times. It's like, do you want to be watching meaningful hockey in February, March, or do you not? Because like, I'm going to Toronto to see the Flames play on St. Paddy's Day, and I can't friggin' wait. You know why? Because the game is most likely going to mean something.
You know, and I am a little confused. And I mean, I'm gonna sympathize, and I see what some of these tank guys are all about. I understand what they're saying, but it looks really good on paper, but sometimes paper doesn't always work out. Ask Buffalo, and I can name a list of other teams too. Ask Chicago how they're doing it with this rebuild. But
don't ask Seth Jones. Holy
no, exactly. Right. That's why I threw that one in there today. But yeah, you know, the thing is though, Kyle, like, I'm the same as you. Like, I want to watch meaningful hockey, and we're not tearing it down to the studs. And if people think we are going to have to do that, they're wrong, because I don't see that. We have too many high quality players with long term contracts, and we have, like you said, a fairly good prospect pool. Is it grade A prospect? No, it's not, but it's pretty solid prospect. Especially on the blue line. Geez, I'm having troubles today. You'd swear I was sick like you. But I really do think, though, that like there is, I agreed with your post, and I think there's a lot of things moving in the right direction. I will push back a little bit on one thing, is I am a little hesitant to believe that we're going to do a lot with leveraging, taking on bad contracts. I wish we would and leverage that a little more. But with the position we're at in the standings, I don't know. Will that happen?
It depends on the context of the deal, right? I mean, they could retain, you know, act as a broker for two other teams, get something in return. I mean, there's so many different ways to go about it. I think at the end of the day, what's become increasingly apparent in the NHL is that that's an asset. Cap space is a huge asset. The ability to take on even portions of those deals. Like,
we're going to have $40+ million.
Yeah, and somebody, I forget about this, but didn't somebody retain some money in the Hanifin trade? Is that right? But it's just stuff you don't even think about because it just gets forgotten, right? But like, teams will jump in.
Who was that? Was it? The easy guess would be Arizona, but I don't think it is.
Well, they don't exist anymore, so that's problem number one. I had to. But yeah, we have the ability to do any number of things, and that doesn't mean that I'm trying to suggest they should go out and acquire a bunch of players at the deadline. We know at this point the players are going to have to make sense. They're not in the rental market, but I think we can all agree that if there is a steady left shooter defenseman available, that they're going to look at that, right? Because I don't think. I mean, I'd love to see guys like Jeremy Poirier get a look, and Brstevich, you know, soon enough. But I mean, none of those guys, I don't believe, are going to be ready to jump in and play significant minutes, obviously. So that's one position they're going to look at. I think they really addressed a lot of their issues with center by acquiring Morgan Frost, because like I said, he's been very, very dynamic since he was brought in. But the point is, it just, I guess I could simplify it in one statement. Like, what more could you possibly want as a Flames fan right now? Like, the only thing you could want is to be absolutely tanking.
I know the one question, you know, like when you say that, right? I know what the whole fan base is going to say, and the same as me. Yeah, we need a superstar center. The problem is, if you look at a lot of the rosters in the league, they don't have a superstar, what I would consider a superstar center.
No, there's a few teams that do, and there's a few teams that have a guy that they're hoping is going to be one, like Connor Bedard or Macklin Celebrini, right?
Yep.
It's the rarest of things in hockey. You're more likely to find a Dustin Wolf as a seventh round pick like the Flames did, as unlikely as that is, than you are to just stumble across a center that isn't draft, who's going to be elite, who wasn't drafted, you know, 1-5, basically.
Yeah.
So I'll put it this way then. I don't know what more the Flames fan fan base could reasonably expect, because I don't think that's a reasonable ask at this point, because the only way that's going to happen is predicated on a season of serious losing, which was never possible, because coming into 2022, the Flames made the second round of the playoffs, looked to be a contending team for years to come. The Gaudreau thing happened. The Tkachuk thing happened. They had to change course, tried to stay competitive, which we were all excited about at the time with Kadri.
Absolutely, who we were.
And it didn't work.
And we don't even know if it doesn't work, because I think Huberdeau's been pretty damn good this year, and Uyghur has too. So,
well, it didn't work immediately. Like
no,
they hoped.
No, it did not. Because me and you both had, well, not even just me and you, the vast majority of Flames fans thought we were ticketed for a deep, deep, deep playoff run.
There were a lot of the pundits had the Flames picked to win the Stanley Cup after those moves.
They did. I have the hockey news that says it.
Yeah, which is. I don't know. To me, it was like treating hockey like basic math. Like, you take in a player with this many points, you put in a player with that many points, and it doesn't work that way. I mean, we've talked about those issues at length, but all that to say that the Flames pivoted 2 years later are at least playoff contenders again and have shed a lot of bad contracts. I mean, we've seen how some of those players, especially Elias Lindholm, since they moved on, how they performed in other markets. It's like, I'd love for somebody to tell me, I'd like to see it on X or anywhere else. Like, what more can you reasonably expect? What more do you want?
Well, think about this. We were trying to re-sign Lindholm last year.
Oh.
At $8 million. Think about that.
Well, look what the Bruins get locked into with him and Zadorov.
The Bruins are in trouble.
Well, but they're trying to do the same thing that any other team that, you know, tries to do, which is, it's kind of gone the way of junior hockey where your teams age out, right? You've only got a certain window. The Penguins window is basically slammed shut at this point with their core. We talked before about Detroit. It happened with them with Datsyuk and Zetterberg, and prior to that they had Yzerman and Shanahan. They were competitive for so friggin' long it was almost unfathomable that they missed the playoffs, right? So now it's like, as you go through those cycles, you know, how do you stay? Well, and the Bruins did everything they could, and Don Sweeney did, I think, to remain competitive, and they're still a competitive team, but you can't, you know, Father Time's undefeated, as they say, right? Bergeron retired. Marchand's getting older. Breaking up the goaltending tandem didn't do them any favors. Swayman missing camp was a killer for him, it seems like. And it's like all of a sudden.
Terrible.
Yeah. And they're trying desperately to stay relevant, but at the same time, you get guys aging out. You don't have enough talent coming in. And that's probably the most difficult balance to juggle as a GM in the NHL today.
Yeah. I mean, your window's only open so long. And then, you know, I always, you know, and speaking of windows, and a goalie has a longer window, but I sit and I look at Dustin Wolf and what we're getting from him. And we don't have time for a teardown rebuild.
No. But I mean, at the same, well, why would you if you have a goaltender that good, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Now, we've talked a lot about him, and rightfully so. The guy should be hands down rookie of the year, I think.
Although I'm going to push back on one thing here. I hadn't watched Celebrini as much as I should have this year, and I was super impressed with him on Sunday night. Super impressed.
Oh, he's a fantastic player.
Yeah.
Fantastic. But Celebrini is a fantastic player on a horrible team.
Horrible.
Wolf is making the Flames
relevant.
Yeah, when they shouldn't be, quite frankly.
Right.
I forget what the estimations were, but I think you might be able to correct me on this, but I've seen numbers where it's like the Flames have probably 12 plus more points than they otherwise would without Dustin Wolf.
Like, you could probably find a million people to argue on that, but I would say that it's probably pretty high. Yeah. I would say it's within, 8 to 12 for sure. I don't think you'd get much argument with that. I really don't.
No. Now, one of the things that I want to talk about, and I mentioned it, tweeted it last night, and got quite a lot of response, the Kevin Ball's game. Yeah. So, and I didn't know this, but our good friend Robert Munich pointed this out. Kevin Ball is actually, despite playing 9 less games than Anderson and Uyghur, is, I think, tied or leading. He's tied for the even strength points among Flame defensemen with 12.
Really? I didn't see that. That's crazy.
And when you watch him play, this is how I try to think of this. And I try to pay more attention to him. He does so many little things so well. So it's almost like it's kind of like secondary assists when somebody makes a big play, but they've done their part and the next guy gets the puck to the guy that scores. Ball breaks up plays and makes them insignificant so quickly, and typically with a stick check or, you know, getting his body in front of people, that it never develops anything worth talking about because the puck's the play's already dead and the puck's going back the other way. Like his first response on D is so good so much of the time that he's constantly preventing high danger chances almost at a distance. And it's remarkable to watch because when you see like how the Flames fared without him, I mean, we actually treaded water okay, but with him in the lineup, it's like, I'm not nearly like as scared when the opposing team comes over the blue line.
I was super excited to have him back for the San Jose game, and then we find out he was out with an illness, and then he hits the lineup last night. And you're right, he's a quiet difference maker. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, but you notice him, and then all of a sudden it's like, well, that play died because of him. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, you're trying to you talk about Anderson's play this year, which I think we can agree has been fairly erratic at best. It's really not, certainly not great in the last couple of months.
I don't know, not at all. And you know, let's talk about that. He goes to the Four Nations. He only gets in one game, and that had to have been like a. I mean, I'm not saying it's an insult by any means. To make the team is a great honor, but I mean, for a guy that the league is super high on, and they're talking $9+ million. I don't know. I mean, and his play this year hasn't warranted that. So it's going to be really interesting to see how that plays out.
Well, I didn't really
bet on. I mean, I don't know. I like Anderson. I really do, and I like what he brings to the team. But I feel like one of my knocks on him is I feel like there's certain times that he tries to do too much, which results in really, really bad results.
And if there's other times like last night against Washington where he comes really, really close to scoring a highlight reel goal by taking a chance. So the problem, I mean, as far as the Four Nations goes, he didn't play himself. He played himself onto the team. Now, mind you, the league isn't, I wouldn't say, totally flush with brilliant Swedish defensemen right now, but you know, he's a high caliber player and deserved a spot, but he didn't play himself into the lineup. He only got one game because based on the season he's had, that's probably really all he deserved.
Yeah. So yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, he hasn't been a big difference maker. And I mean, again, he is a very talented player. He's going to be a lot better off having Ball, you know, back beside him. But I mean, this talk of a contract in the $9 million range is absolutely absurd. I mean, I'm sitting here making fun of Darnell Nurse's contract every chance I get. If we were to give that to Anderson, I haven't got a leg to stand on as far as I'm concerned. Better defensively, mind you, but that's still a ton of money.
He's better defensively than Darnell Nurse by a long shot in my mind. So I don't think you'd look quite as a fool as that. I think, you know, I look at Darnell Nurse and it's like, when you sign a defenseman to big dollars, like he better damn well be defensively sound, right?
Well, I sure hope so.
It's easier to err on a defenseman and say, well, he's not putting up the points we wanted him to, but we feel safe with him on the back end, right? And I surely don't think the Oilers feel that way. And I mean, I watch the Oilers a lot, and I laugh a lot at his defensive play.
Well, you could say the same thing with Seth Jones in Chicago, right?
For sure.
Jones threw his whole team under the bus in an interview. I mean, and you know, I'm not going to sit here and come down on him for it because I do think that sometimes players can stand to be a little bit more honest in their media availability. But
I don't think he ends the year in Chicago. Do you?
I'm sorry.
I don't think he ends the year in Chicago. Do you?
Well, I don't see how he could now. But I mean, how do you move a contract like that? The guy has not been good the last few seasons, and it's not just a consequence of being on a crappy team either. I don't see enough from what I've watched now. It's interesting, though, and I brought this up as well. So you got Seth Jones. What was he? So he basically said that the same team they were at the beginning of the season, they haven't improved at all. You got Luke Shen saying in Nashville, basically, he's never played in a team that struggles so much to score a goal. Yeah. And Shen was probably going to be a rental when the Predators started to fall apart anyway. But, I mean, all of a sudden you have all these D in the league, or at least a couple thus far, speaking their minds, and it's like, it's basically a one-way ticket out of town, right?
So are you saying that the Flames should go after one?
Not Seth Jones, because that contract's way too long. We have way too many good defensemen in our pipeline. Okay.
I just wanted to make sure I didn't have to check you, and I didn't know how much cold medicine you took.
No, but I mean, would I hate acquiring a guy like Luke Shen? Not necessarily.
I'd be fine. I'd be totally fine with that.
Yep.
Now, it would go against some of the things we've said,
but not really. If you're going
to
make the playoffs, which the Flames have a reasonably good chance of doing,
according to Money Puck, a 46.9% chance.
And if the Canucks lose in regulation tonight, that's only going to go up, right?
Canucks currently are at 38.7.
Well, there you go. So, but in any case, if you're going to make the playoffs, or think you're going to, acquiring a piece like that, which is going to be quite low cost, it makes a lot of sense. From a depth perspective, guys got lots of experience. I don't have an issue with that. What I have an issue with is taking on guys like Seth Jones, thinking like we did years ago when they got Dougie Hamilton. It's like, oh, we're way ahead of the curve. It's like, you got to recognize an aberration for what it is, right?
Yep. Oh, I'm with you. So that brings us to another topic that was a hot button topic this week in Calgary, and brings us to our X Factor too. And our X Factor comes from Snowden of 4,000. Claim Valimaki, left defense you are screaming for. His last two seasons have shown that there is something there. Only 26 beside Uyghur could be the change he needs.
And we all know now, at this point that he cleared.
He did clear, and no one picked him up, and I believe he's being assigned. But I don't know. I'm interested to hear your take on this. He's got a $2 million cap hit, one more year on it. He was a Flame that we lost in on a waiver claim.
Yep.
And has not been the same player since his injury. I think we can all agree upon that.
Yep.
Is there something that could come of this? Maybe. But boy, I just don't know. How did you feel about this? Did you want to claim him? Because I went back and forth. I really did. I was, ooh.
I wanted to because I saw it as super low risk, right?
I see that. I agree with you.
Yeah, there's clearly something there. He's a very skilled player. And it's a great X factor because I think we were all thinking about this if we weren't talking about it. Guys, and it's strange. I mean, even it's a totally different position, totally different age, et cetera, but like the Derek Ryan thing, it's like this is a player that has utility somewhere. Somebody with an injury or somebody with an opportunity, we've talked about Joel Hanley maybe being a miscast in a top four role. It's like Valimaki probably would have fit in really well with Uyghur because God knows anybody can play with him, right? Might have even elevated Uyghur's game another step. But for whatever reason, the Flames took a pass, as did the rest of the league. And I don't know if part of it's that injury concern or because they know things about the player that we don't.
There could but be.
Based on the Flames' needs, did they look
at their lineup and say, we have Bean for another year. I don't think Bean works out in Calgary. I don't.
Well, he hasn't so far. I suspect that Bean's going to be playing for the Wranglers before the end of the season, if not next year for sure.
Yeah, I would agree.
Unless he gets claimed. But I mean, and this is a guy I want to remind everybody, like when he first went to Columbus, I wanted the Flames to sign him because I thought going back to Calgary would be good for him. Unfortunately, for whatever reason, it hasn't panned out. So,
yeah.
You know, and we see that a lot. There's players that go and play for their hometown teams, and it can be disastrous. And there's other factors at play too, without getting too deep into it. But Jonathan Drouin, Montreal, that should have been a match made in heaven. It was a match made in hell. Now, mind you, a French Canadian player in Montreal is probably the highest level of difficulty there is.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like you have these things in your head that make sense on paper, and they just don't play out the way you hoped. And Jake Bean's one of those.
And going back to the Valimaki thing, like I agree with you in the fact that, yes, it is low risk. So I guess I was fine either way. If we did it, we did it, and it was a risk, and it's a short-term risk, and I'm fine with it. Worst case, we put him on waivers again, right?
Yeah, that's the thing. And when you're trying to supplement your roster but also retain a lot of your assets, which most teams obviously love to do, you know, roll the dice. What do you got to lose? Absolutely nothing.
No.
Oh, no, you made yourself deeper and didn't give anything up. God, how could you?
Yeah, we got Braden Pahal on waivers, and I've been over the top excited about that. So,
yeah, well, Uncle Kurt, I mean, he's involved in a lot of discussion on Twitter, but he made a comment actually about, you know, Braden being deserving more minutes, and I agree. And I made the comment, and he liked it after. It's like anything. It's like, and I've been through this situation many, many times. When you're really, really good at your job, your bosses don't want to move you up because then they have to replace you in the role you were so good at, right? No. And it's a problem in all lines of work, and I really think that's exactly what Pahal's issue is that.
But he's on the right side, and he fits it so well having Uyghur and Anderson both on the right. You know, I feel like for his long term success in Calgary, where he's at's great.
Yeah, the problem right now to be honest with you, when I look at these defensive pairings, and indulge me here for a second because I'm kind of thinking as I talk, if Anderson was the type of defenseman that elevated his partner the way that, say, Ball elevates Anderson, the way Uyghur elevates anybody, if Anderson was able to do that, that right there could allow you to change your D pairings, and all of a sudden you don't have to be worried about who he's paired with, right? Maybe you have
and allow you to want to give him money too.
Well, and then you'd also have a commentator's nightmare, the Ball and Pahal pairing. How fun would that be, right?
That would be something, huh?
But again, you're limited because when players don't make players around them better to some extent, or at least allow them to tread water and not sink, and this has been our problem with the fourth line, right? Pospisil, I think, is making Lomberg and Rooney better because he creates space for everybody, and you saw it in every shift they played.
Yep.
So if you don't do that, it limits your coach's ability to move pieces around and find other matches that'll work. So the way it is, Pahal is likely going to stay where he's at, and he's been exceptional at it.
I agree.
And then Ball's going to be with Anderson to keep him steady, and Uyghur's going to keep getting Hanley or whoever else he might get, and we'll see how that plays out.
Yeah. Speaking of waivers, the Flames put Tyson Barry on waivers since we last talked.
Yes.
He did clear, and he's been assigned to the Wranglers. Any surprise with that?
No. I mean, early in the season, when after he made the team, I think we all knew he was going to be like a power play specialist and would probably play semi-regularly. Well, then he hardly played at all. And ultimately only played, I think, 13 games for the Flames. And it's unfortunate because, I mean, obviously I've never played the NHL, never got close to any meaningful level of hockey. So it's easy for me to say, but the guy clearly has lost a step. He just doesn't have the speed. And the thing was, the eye test, it was evident. He was getting beaten to pucks regularly. He was scrambling a lot. Like, he can't, they kind of knew he probably was going to take a regular shift in the NHL anymore. But now it's like most guys, you're a better option.
He's kind of like me in a beer league thing. It's like, I know I should be there, but my body can't get me there. And so I can't be there and I look like an idiot. But, you know, I think when Calgary took on Barry, I think it was more like, hey, could this guy be the answer to our power play? And if he is that, then we're totally fine running him in our bottom pairing. But he didn't. Yeah. He didn't boost that power play like we wanted. And like he's done so well in the past. I mean, this guy's really had a great career, a great, great career, and was a power play specialist. And it just didn't, he's just lost a step. And unfortunately, it didn't work. I wasn't surprised that the waiver claim went through and he didn't get claimed at all.
I don't think he's coming back up because, again, guys like Solovyov have played so well.
Solovyov has
they're been the impressed. Yeah, they're the ones that have, you know, unfortunately for Barry, have passed him by. And I think part of the thinking at the time, too, was bringing Barry into camp, give him somebody to kind of tutor the younger defenseman, because as we've often said, we've got, you know, Morin, Perak, Brustevich, we have all these defensemen who are, you know, very offensively gifted, and Barry be a great tutor for that. But as a regular NHLer, and even as a 7th D now, there's better options, and that's kind of the end of that story.
One thing we probably should mention, we've been tough on Anderson on this show again. He had a lot of blocks last night and was really, really good. I mean, blocks. Yeah. Like, I guarantee that dude's walking with a limp today because, TC ate some shots. Oof.
Yeah. He loves abuse, man. Getting hit by cars and getting hit by Ovechkin shots. Like,
I forgot about that.
Oh, I'm sure he didn't.
No.
Man.
I think he thinks about it every time he looks at the schedule and they're headed to Detroit, you know?
Yeah. Or approaches a crosswalk.
You want to hear a crazy story? I get kicked out of a college class for this. I can't believe this is going to go off the rails. It was an adult and aging class, and one of the questions was, why is society's intelligence level disintegrated over the last 100 years? And I put down crosswalks. Thought of that after 12-pack of beer one night, and I just said, hey, we spend too much time in society protecting stupid people now, and yeah, I don't think that's like paper over so well.
It's like Bill Burr says, relentless species protects the weak.
Yes, we do. So. Yeah.
So not saying it's right or wrong, just saying it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just telling the truth here. I mean, okay, I got a question for you. This week we heard a ton of talk, not so much centered around Calgary, but I did see it on social media directed towards Calgary about going after a Rantanen or going after going after a Sam Bennett. I am dying to hear your thoughts on this.
Well, it's been covered pretty extensively, of course. Rantanen, I don't know why he'd come to Calgary unless he just wants a payday.
I don't think he's coming to Calgary.
Or that, or he is the best of friends with Nazem Kadri and we're just not aware of it, which is entirely possible. But the more interesting one to me, and I would love to see it, would be Sam Bennett return, because I loved Sam Bennett.
I did not want Sam Bennett to go. And I know people are going to be like, yeah, whatever. You guys didn't say that when Sam Bennett was here. No, we were frustrated with Sam Bennett too. But I also remember the Sam Bennett and the Flames playoffs that whatever year. What year was that? 2015
was his first year. Mm. He was great.
He was great. And I love his style. I do. And I know someone's going to pay him big bucks. And really his reward during the season is regular season numbers aren't great. About a 50-point guy probably. But what he brings you in key games like the Four Nations or a Stanley Cup playoffs is immeasurable. It's
well, he was actually tied for the Flames lead in playoff goals over his time here. Like he had 11 in 30 games or something like that. Very, very, very effective player. Now, signing him as the perceived scoring center that he is in Florida doesn't mean that's necessarily what you're going to get. Mm-hmm. But there's also a lot of false conjecture out there that the Flames gave him every chance to succeed, blah, blah. Sam Bennett never got an extended look as a number one center in Calgary, never for any length of time. I do not recall a time when he centered like Gaudreau and Lindholm for
more than two games.
It was ridiculous.
And some games Jeff Ward would have him out there for like a period. And it's like, that's all you get for an audition is a period.
Yeah. And like what it boils down to is if you're going to rush a guy into the NHL at 18 years old in the playoffs, no less, you have to give some of that patience back as he develops to an NHL player. You know what I mean? Like you can't, if you're going to bring a guy in at 22, 23 and expect him to play a certain role. Well, yeah, he's been marinating for a while. He's learned the pro game. But to bring him to the NHL, especially the playoffs, and then you don't show him any amount of patience and give him an extended leash in a scoring role, I don't know what you think you're going to get. It's like you're not putting the guy in a position to succeed.
I agree.
And it's kind of shitty now because looking back on it, I mean, even the other pieces of Bennett being moved, like Emil Heinemann has got like 12 or 13 goals in Montreal. He's having a great year, right?
Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, and this is a guy that... I
totally forgot about that.
And so did I until I looked at the Habs roster. I'm like, oh yeah, like he was part of that deal. And it's like, you know, Brad Treliving made some good moves as the Flames GM, and he made some really bad ones. You know, the Monahan move has turned out to be a really, really bad one. And I'll pridefully say I felt at the time that he kind of cut bait a little too aggressively on that. I thought Monahan deserved better, and he's been tremendous in Columbus. And then as far as Bennett goes, it's like, a lot of people think he got tons of chances because they remember him getting chances, but they seem to forget how short those chances were.
They were not lengthy chances. And I thought when Sutter got here, he would get more chances, and he was just starting to get those chances, and then he got shipped off.
Yeah, it was literally like the month prior. But by that point, there was like a comment made about, you know, a change of scenery or something. I remember vaguely, and it was just like, it was just too little too late. That's the easiest way to put it.
Yeah, it was.
So let me ask you a question. So, because of this road trip and the murderer's row of opponents we have, we got Tampa, we got Carolina, we got Florida. What game frightens you the most? Or what opponent are you most worried about?
When I first looked at this, I thought Carolina coming off a back-to-back from Florida the night before. But then I'm like, well, Tampa Bay beat us 8-3 earlier this year, and we didn't even look like we could skate at all with them. I'm hoping that was just a bad game. The next three scare the heck out of me. Tampa, Florida, Carolina. Oof, all of them scare me. But that Carolina on a Sunday afternoon.
That'd be a tough one. And Tampa's red hot right now.
Yeah. So. They just come off a big win against Edmonton last night, I believe. And they're putting up points like crazy. And I Oh, here's the sideline. Who do you think's going goaltenders for these next through the weekend?
That's a good question. I've actually been thinking a little bit about
Lennar that. Lennar looked really good last night. I will say that we have to give him the credit that he deserves. I thought he looked really good.
The problem, though, is if they go back into the previous way of thinking, whereby you think it's a tandem situation, right?
I don't want to change what we're doing. All I'm saying is he played well last night.
But I'm worried the coaching staff might do that.
No, I don't think so. I think we're going to see Wolf against Tampa. I think we're going to see Wolf again on Saturday against Florida. And I think we'll see Vladar Sunday against Carolina.
I'm going to say, I think we both agree it's going to be Wolf, Tampa. I think you see Vladar against the Panthers. And I think you see Wolf against the Hurricanes.
Okay, so we just have that one flip-flopped.
Yeah, and the only reason I say that is I just feel like on the tail end of the weekend, they're going to be looking to Wolf to steal a game, and they might think a little more rest may benefit him. But based on how both goaltenders have played of late, I'm not particularly concerned about the breakdown, because it's not, again, Wolf is more likely to steal you a game. Vladar's proven he can do it, and he was very good against Washington and his prior start as well. But the forward group and the D have got to play like they played against Washington.
Oh, yeah.
It's that simple.
This is really, really, really tough. This is a tough stretch, and it's gonna create so much clarity for us coming into trade deadline, which is just a little over a week away. I mean, it's the 7th of March, Friday is trade deadline. That's coming real quick. So a week and a day away from the release of this pod. So hey, we need to figure out what we're gonna do and what our game plan is gonna be, and this week's gonna give us that clarity. I really truly believe that.
Yeah, and it's funny, we keep talking about how important this is. I wouldn't be at all surprised if, based on how the Canucks fare, the Kings fare, the Avalanche fare, how we fare, I wouldn't be at all surprised if after this road trip, it's like we're a point in or a point out. You know what I mean? Like, this is going to go down to the wire.
I agree. Say, I saw a graphic this week before we go here, and it was each NHL team's worst team to play against. Do you know who the Flames' hardest opponent has been? Over the since the Flames started.
Oh, wow.
I know this is a long shot guessing. I'm putting you on the spot. It's the Boston Bruins. The Flames are 42-63, 10-4 against the Boston Bruins.
Wow.
Now, the Flames are the most difficult opponent for two teams. Can you name those two teams? No, Edmonton is not one. Carolina. Carolina is just 29-45-7 against the Flames, and the New Jersey Devils are 29-69-11.
See, the Devils don't shock me, because I just remember so many games where we beat them.
We always beat them, it seems like.
Yeah, the Hurricanes I wasn't as aware of, but
yeah, anyway. Me either. The only thing I remember about the Hurricanes, I don't know why, I remember a Saturday game in Carolina, and Lindholm had just a beauty goal, and the Flames ended up winning. It was a couple years ago, and I don't know why that game just sticks in my
head. Was that an afternoon game?
It was Saturday afternoon game. I hate afternoon.
Yeah, I remember game. That. Oh,
man, I was watching it, and I was like, oh, that was just a game. It was a good hockey game. It was a really good game. Oh,
man, you hate them so much. You should live on the East Coast of Canada, because there's never really is an afternoon game when you're a Flames fan. Very rarely. There's only like one or two a year.
Yeah, but then I don't know. I couldn't. I'm turning into an old man. I can't do this late night shit anymore. I don't know how you do it.
Oh, dude, when they go into LA at 11:30 at night, like
I used to love 9 o'clock in my time zone, which is 8 o'clock Calgary. I used to love that start. You know, it's like settle in, and just really watch. Now I'm like, oh, this better be a good game, or I'm going to be dozing. I can do it on a Saturday night. I have troubles on a Tuesday or Wednesday or Thursday night. I like the 8 o'clock. My time, 7 o'clock Calgary starts. That's my wheelhouse right there.
Yeah. Yeah. The 7 o'clock Calgary starts are not, they're pretty tough. That's 10 here, but the 6 o'clock ones, which are very rare, are beautiful. And then the East Coast swing, it's like, oh yeah, like, supper's been consumed, dishes are done, feet are on the couch, let's go. Like, it's just so easy.
But you're going to love this road trip. You're going to love it. So
I hope I do. If I have to watch a bunch of misery, then oof.
Well, last night was a hell of a start. It really was.
Oh yeah, it was. And anybody who says that they weren't shocked by that, it's an absolute liar. So
everybody was shocked. Everybody.
I must have watched that Coronado shot like 10 times. It's so funny to me. Like, a guy is that gassed, he can still rip a shot like that.
Jeez. As we head out, big thanks for everybody's comments on last week's episode. We did it a little bit different. We're going to do it a lot during the offseason. I have special episodes talking about, you know, different things in Flames history. And last week we talked Flames jerseys just because of the Four Nations break. Lauren Stewart threw out a nice comment on X about great episode, boys. And then from Carbono put on there, before you suggest 14 retired for Theo, check out the Magic Man Kent Nielsen stats. The fastest Swede to 100 points, 200 points, 300 points, most Flames points in a season, still 10th in NHL history in career points per game, and he also wore 14. So good comment. I didn't know Kent Nielsen's numbers that were that great. So appreciate it.
Yeah. Well, he was such a hero. He was kind of like Sergei Makarov. He was such a here and gone kind of player that it's a shame that he kind of gets forgotten for how unbelievable he was.
I forgot the argument. Yeah, but it is a good argument. And it's a number that should be in the rafters one way or another, in my opinion. But that's a topic for another episode. It was actually a topic for last episode, right? But next week we will be back with a normal episode. Next week we'll be recording Monday night, Tuesday drop, and we're gonna know a whole lot more. And I'm excited to see how everything pans out.
I'm excited to see the tone of next week's show. Will we be miserable or will we be happy? Stay tuned and find out.
We're happy. God, we're really happy on today's show.
Yeah, and I feel like shit, so that's unbelievable.
Well, I hope you get better, and enjoy this week's early games. You can get a good night's sleep, and hopefully we see some more W's, and we're back again next week. So, Flames fans, thanks for tuning in. Kyle and I will be back next week, and enjoy this road trip, and just get a split every night. Get half the points and we'll be in good shape, right, Kyle?
Shoot from the moon, you land among the stars. 4 for 6, let's go.
Have a good week, Flames friends.
She was a vamp, and don't love her no more, no more.
Thanks for listening to Flames Unfiltered with Brad Giroux and Kyle Lewis. Your source for unfiltered Calgary Flames hockey talk. Keep it locked on flamesunfiltered.ca. Subscribe where you get all your podcasts to never miss an episode. Flames Hockey Talk every week, presented by Inside Edge Hockey Media Group.